you try and force someone to do, because even though it produced no pain to the so-called students who were hooked up to the electrodes, it caused emotional pain to the people you were testing, and they can sue you, and they did. So yeah, you're not going to get a lot of studies like that done again for that very reason.
Interestingly enough, I had a connection with the gentleman, and I mean, he was such a guy in his later years. You know, he's a professor at the City University of New York at the Graduate Center, and he was having a heart attack. But you know, he was receiving an old doc for one of his students. He refused to go to the hospital, and that was the end of it.
Oh well, he died on stage, if you will. He didn't shirk his responsibilities. What can I tell you? I perhaps they put it on his tombstone.
Well, even in the scientific community, we're still human beings. I mean, there are those that try to achieve what they call being a whiz. You know, to separate the ego from whatever it is that you are. But that's a whole nother discussion.
Ah, yes, philosophy. But getting back to sentience, do I think that robots or mechanical objects will be able to attain sentience? My surmise is ultimately yes. It will get to a certain degree of complex logic manipulation, so that to the outside world it will be it will be just the same to us on the outside as being sentient. But I mean, ultimately, you believe that you're sentient. I believe that I'm sentient. But what real proof ultimately do you have that the guy is sentient, or he's just not simulating it?
Have you ever had an hour of a day, though, Roy, where you ask yourself, am I really conscious? Is this really happening to me right now? Maybe you've never had that happen. For very brief periods of time, I've sensed something like that. And you can ask yourself, what is consciousness? Over to you, Roy.
Yeah, I mean, I've had these philosophical turns of thought because some people have lucid dreams, which I sort of really wish I could do. I did it a few times, I think, but there is people who tell me that they can trigger a lucid dream. A lucid dream is a dream where you get to narrate it. You get to modify and change it on a conscious level. And in many ways, we accept dreams as reality when we're in the dream. I'm sure you've had dreams where at some point or another you say, wait a second, is this a dream or is this reality? And at the time, you can't really tell definitively the difference. When you wake up and you realize the nonsense that was going on, you get a better feel for it. But who knows if there's another level of that filter someplace else. So, yeah, we can triple-eye philosophical, but who knows if this is the real thing. For each of us, it's probably a simulated reality inside our head running at close to the same time with a couple of hundred milliseconds of a delay, because brains don't work instantaneously.
Richard, Sam, standing by for you.
I see the screen, you see the screen. Do we see the same thing?
Richard, sorry to cut in. This is Sam, KD2NFJ. I'm standing by to talk to you.
Okay, somebody is standing by to talk to Richard. I'm Richard, so maybe you want to talk to me. If it's not too lengthy, go right ahead. K2LIW. My name is Dick.
Yeah, Richard, this is KD2NSJ, Sam. And Roy, nice program, Richard, nice program always. Richard, I did what you said. I didn't want to change the train of thought with Roy. I apologize. So I looked it up, and it's under the ARRL, and it's under Auto Manufacturer's Policies. It gives you a list of cars. It gives you their phone number, the dealers. It gives you what the problem is with the RF. It also tells you the kit that you need to get. And then at the bottom of the page, there's an article called RF, and it talks about the RF. But it's called EMC, electronic magnet capacity, EMC. But it, you said you know, buying some cars, and I found them. But it really is a beautiful article. You understand it better than I do, because they give you kits that you can get, that you can install, that prevents that. And I didn't realize it was that dangerous, because our sparking can take the paint off your car. So I didn't realize it was that bad if you have the antenna in the wrong place. So just to back up your class, which is really good, I followed up on what you said.
I thank you, Sam. That sounds like very good information. Do you happen to know what issue of QST and what year did that article appear in?
Oh, yeah, I didn't wait for the beep, sorry. No, it just says auto manufacturer policy on the AARL. And then under search, if you put auto manufacturer's policy, it'll come up. But wait a minute, I didn't see a thing. They just give you the phone number, you know, Chesterfield Ridge Road, New Jersey. But there was no date on it. Usually they give you the date you write. But no, but it just says about cars that are sensitive to RF, VHF, and UHF, and HF. And they list all the cars, Chrysler, oh man, Richard. They got General Motors, Honda, Hyundai, Isuzu, whatever, Mercedes Benz, Mitsubishi, you name it, they even got Porsche. You can, Reggie, you can put your radio in your Porsche now.
Yeah, thank you, Sam. That's valuable information. I was guessing that ARRL would be afraid to issue that for liability reasons, but obviously they did. Ah, amazing. Okay, back to Roy, AC2GS, with our consciousness discussion. And you feel that eventually a machine will have consciousness. It'll take something like a very advanced Turing test in order to confirm that. And when it comes to intense dreams, my wife happens to have very intense dreams and sometimes talks during her sleep. But the intensity of my wife's dreams can best be demonstrated by the fact that on a couple of occasions, I did something in my dream that she was unhappy with. And 6 months later, I got blamed for what occurred in her dream. And I had to confirm to her that, yes, that didn't really occur. You dreamed that. AC2GS, K2RIW. Look what you're missing, not being married, Roy.
Very good. Well, I've had interesting arguments with women, so you don't have to necessarily be married to have that happen to you. But, unfortunately, I tend to have this little theory that part of sleeping and dreams and such is the process of our brain moving our memories around from short-term storage into intermediate and into long-term. And along the way, sometimes it will trigger things, but in strange combinations that usually didn't happen in reality. If you wake up right towards the end of a dream, you're much more likely to remember it, especially if it had some kind of dramatic aspect to it, and it kind of stays in the back of your head. All the dreams that you have in the middle of the night that you then go out of REM sleep, those pretty much get washed away. But lucid dreams aren't so much as distinct or strong dreams as manipulative dreams. I was able to dream that long before we had projection televisions, that I was able to project a movie onto door of my closet and watch it while I was sleeping. And that was loads of fun, but I hardly ever had that happen again. They're called lucid dreams. And by the way, I found the page that Sam talked about, and I will offer a link to it to roy.ac2gs.com.
That page of information of yours, Roy, boy, it must be getting it must be up to 50 items by now. Over to you, Roy. Wow.
Yeah, every so often I look at it and I gotta break it down to different pages. Definitely, when it gets to 2019, it's gonna get a new page. It depends upon how many more links I put in it, whether I split it up or not. I haven't decided quite when I'm gonna do that. But it's inevitable, because it's just getting way too long.
Yeah, you may have to break it up into separate categories that allow people to find a particular item a little bit easier, as opposed to going through all the hold-on list. Look how much extra work I'm volunteering you for, Roy.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, good old John, may he rest in peace. He read some emails and what have you. I mean, I'm sitting here with the chat room on, although there's no one but myself. I'm sitting looking at the Echo Link. I'm recording this because Mike's having problems with his radio and computer. I'm throwing a lot of balls up in the air.
We're going to have to double your salary, Roy.
At least, and double the vacation time.
And give you another raise as well as that new bonus.
I'm going to hold you to all these things, Dick.
Good thing I've got this great big nest egg of money I'm sitting on, so no problem.
Okay, very good. Maybe I'll look into more dream articles in the future. Dreams kind of resonate with people.
There's a huge contrast between me and my wife. Almost every single night she has a dream, and some of them are more intense than others. I can go for 2 solid months without a single dream.
Well, but you see, that's the question. Is it really that you're without any dreams, or is it simply that you don't remember any of the dreams? Because, again, it's not at all uncommon. If a person sleeps through their entire REM rapid eye movement cycle and goes into the other phase, they simply lose memory, because your memory gets put into standby when you're in REM sleep. And so the way to really remember a dream is to be woken just at the tail end, just while you're just coming off REM sleep. So it may simply be that your sleep cycles are nice and constant and uninterrupted, and so you get to, you know, erase all your memories after each playing.
Maybe that's it.
WB2CUK.
Yes, Bill.
Am I coming through? I guess I'm coming through. I've had some doozies of dreams, but as I'd be waking up, I'd actually reach for something, and of course, it wouldn't be there because it's in a dream, but I've had dreams or something. I can't remember if I really did what happened in the dream or whether it was a dream. Reality, I have trouble with that. Dick, I wanted to ask you if you would go back to antenna tuners for a minute. I have a question.
Let's see if Roy is willing to create an interruption. It's your choice, Roy.
I'm more than happy to give Bill a chance with his question.
Fire away, Roy. I mean, Bill. You got it, Bill.
Thank you, you.
Thanks a lot. Dick, I wanted to ask you, I know you use a tuner to tune up a transmitter to match your antenna, but what about matching the antenna when you're receiving? If you're going to play with the tuner, I know a lot of times you can get peaks and valleys on the receiver. Is that a good way of tuning it up? Like if you got a nice peak at a certain frequency, that it'll be peaked up with the transmit frequency?
By definition, a low-loss antenna tuner is a bi-directional device. It obeys the law of reciprocity. That's a fancy way of saying that if your transmitter really is a 50-ohm source device, if your receiver is really a 50-ohm source load, then when you adjust the antenna tuner to get the best possible impedance match between transmitter and antenna, it is automatically the best match impedance match between antenna and receiver. So tuning up the antenna tuner to get the best possible response on the receiver is the right way to go. It will, you could adjust your antenna tuner without doing any transmitting by doing it with the receiver. But there's a catch. Very few barefoot receivers are a 50 ohm input impedance. However, if you put something like a 6 or a 10 dB attenuator, a 50 ohm attenuator, between the receiver and everything else, then you're forcing the receiver to be a 50 ohm load, and then when you adjust the antenna tuner for the best possible signal strength on that particular band, it would be the best setting for transmitting. So An antenna tuner is a reciprocal device. The problem is, let me drop. If you had good laboratory equipment, and you look at the input connector of a receiver, some receivers might be a 300 ohm load with a 10 picofarad capacitance across it, so to speak. Some receivers are, they look that way on certain bands when you look into them. In that particular case, when you adjust the antenna tuner for the best reception, you'd be matching to a 300 ohm load, not a 50 ohm load, and that would confuse you. So, as you can tell, in general, when you adjust the knobs on an antenna tuner, a manual antenna tuner, to get the best possible reception into a receiver, most of the time I think you're going to be very close to the correct tuning for the transmitter. Does that make some sense, the Bill? WB2CUK, K2LIW in the TechNet?
Oh, absolutely. Definitely. And I'd rather spend 10 or 15 minutes tuning it up on receive rather than putting out a signal and maybe interfering with somebody and using up power and everything. So when I get my transceiver set up, I'm going to try that. Right now I'm doing a lot of listening on 80 meters, and I have a TS-440 in the wings. I just got to set up a nice antenna port, and then I'm going to get on 80 meters with 100 watts. So it's going to be fun. I think I'm going to sign. I'm getting ready to go to bed here. It's getting late, and I've been having these dreams sitting here in your kitchen. When I go to sleep, I dream. So my sleep hours have been changing. I do more getting up and playing with the computer at 2 in the morning than sleeping. I think that's why. I got to learn to sleep through the night and not do that. 73, guys, it's been a very interesting discussion on the net here. WB2CUK is going to be clear.
Yeah, be careful, Bill. There's a name for that disease when you wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning and get on your computer. There's a name for that disease, and it gets worse with age. There was another person who wanted to say something. Who was that other person? K2LIW listening.
Evening, gentlemen. I just want to wait for the beep, but I don't know. This is Bernie, K2MU. I've been listening. I'm reading the mail. I just have a quick question. I've been on HF. I'm in an apartment, but I haven't been hearing anything on HF. Do you guys know what's going on? Is it my equipment, or is something severely wrong with the low band?
Because of the way the sunspot cycle is, the low bands have not been well opened these days, but particularly late at night, if you tune across 80 meters and 40 meters and you don't hear anything, then it's time to check on the sensitivity of your equipment. Those bands are there, and there are people late at night talking on those bands, Bernie. Back to you, Bernie.
Okay, that's a good suggestion. Resolve this tonight, no bands late at night, because I've been trying 10, 15, 20, even 40, but not late at night, and I haven't been hearing anything. I mean, you know, you usually hear one or two if the bands aren't open, you know, but I mean, this is like the craziest, the most dead I've ever heard it.
WH-CDL.
There's the guy I was going to suggest. Andy, WA2CDL, runs a tune-up clinic at every one of the ARRL get-togethers, and he could test your receiver. See, during the daytime, the D-layer absorbs the signals, and 80 meters goes completely dead at high noon. But at 10 o'clock at night or 12 o'clock at night, 80 meters should be there. WA2CDL, Andy, what do you recommend that that Bernie do? You got it, Andy.
So I just wanted to make him aware, which I found out this morning, because I got on 75 every Sunday. There's a net that I check into, and no signals were heard, even in some stations that are usually 20, 30, 40 over S9, were down below the noise level. Very, very unusual conditions that haven't experienced in a long time. And then it was noted that there was a solar flare that just occurred, which wiped out the bands. I don't know when it occurred, but it was recent. I don't know what bands it affected, but I know it affected 80 meters and really disrupted communications. It was, it was just noted as such. So I just want to let you know that because of that, that interfered with communications on at least the 80-meter band, or I should say 75 meters. Go ahead, Dick. I just wanted to give that information. I have to look it up to see when this occurred, but it was recent.
Okay, the combination of D-layer absorption in the daytime, particularly at high noon, and the solar flare can make the 80-meter band in the daytime super dead. But right now, if you tuned your receiver across 80 meters right now at 10:30 at night, I'm guessing you're going to hear signals tonight. Is that true, Andy? W2CDL, K2RIW?
Technically I should, because the sun is not up and the layer, at least the F layer disappears. But I haven't been on this evening. So I'm just, I don't know what the guy who just asked the question, I don't know when this, if he's talking about it being dead all the time or just recently, because this just happened. And again, I could not hear any signals this morning. And this was 8 o'clock in the morning. So it's after the sun came up. So, but I'll give a listen and see. Usually, I get good reception on 75 at night. I hear good signals, so I'm expecting that to occur, as opposed to this morning. Back to you.
Bunch of space weather. And last night, there was a surprise geomagnetic storm, Andy.
A2MU.
Andy, have you ever seen a time when 80 meters is completely dead at, say, midnight? Has that ever happened? You've done a lot more HF operating than I have, Andy. Have you ever seen 80 meters dead at midnight? Over to you, Andy.
All right, first of all, I acknowledge Eric. He said there was a, whatever you just said, I just forgot, the storm, the geometric storm. Okay, well, that would make sense because of what happened this morning. But, usually at night, I don't think I've ever heard the band's actually dead. No, it's, there's always activity. And, of course, like you mentioned, the noise level will vary because of, and will be relatively high at times because it's, because of atmospheric conditions and lightning and so on. So, I'm used to that. I usually get a noise level between S8 and S9 or 10 over S9 around there. That's usually the norm, so that's what happened. K2MU also was out there, so maybe he'll add something. Go ahead, Dick.
This is WB2C UK. The bands have been kind of flat the last couple of nights. The Andy's right, they should do a lot on there at 10 o'clock. I'll probably go on there in about a half hour or so. Andy, I wonder what nest you check into. I listen to quite a few there.
KD2RY. KD2MU. Bernie, you wanted to say something?
Yes, this is K2MU.
K2MU, go ahead.
I've been playing ham radio since 1976. All right? I got three transceivers here. I can't hear anybody on 10 through 80. 24/7. This is going on for a couple of weeks. All right? So that's what's going on. So maybe if you have a beam, you can pick up somebody that's really weak somewhere. But I just got a wire hanging out the window here, and I've spoken to China with 100 watts, and I usually can talk to somebody on CW, and I haven't been able to hear any ham operators on 10 through 80, and I'm on 75 now, and I don't hear anybody. So it ain't just me, apparently. So you guys should know, apparently, you're not on the air on those bands. Back to whoever gets it. Andy, this is Bernie, K2MU.
Bernie, it's time you check that antenna. Put an ohmmeter between the center conductor in the shield, in the shack. Something's wrong with that antenna. You got three pieces of equipment connected to one single antenna, and you hear nothing on all those bands all the time. it's time to check on that antenna. No matter how bad the antenna is, if the antenna is working, on some of those receivers, on some of those bands, on some of the times during the day, you've got to be hearing some signals. Time to check that antenna. W-H-U-C-D-L, K-2-L-A-W, go ahead, Andy.
Negative, of course I checked the antenna.
All right, let me just clear up something, and I got Eric also. Dick, can I just make a comment?
Go right ahead, Andy.
All right, and you have KG2RY, Dave, also. I'm listening on 80 right now, on 75. Let me find the station on sideband, and I'll give you the frequency, okay? And you tell me if you hear them. All right, so let me just do that first, because I do hear activity on it right now. So, K2MU, Bernie, if you stand by, I will give you the frequency that I hear activity, okay?
That sounds great. It'll be nice to hear somebody on the radio, on HF. Great, Andy, thank you.
Bernie, you can take a random length of wire. Take a random length of wire, connect it to the center conductor of the receiver, and that random length of wire is laying on a wooden table. You will hear signals on those bands at nighttime. That's a completely separate antenna to test. Who wants to get it now? K2RIW?
Richard Sam, comment.
I'm already doing that, Dick.
What do you, with that random length of wire sitting on the table, what do you hear?
I've been hearing absolutely nothing on 10 through 80 for the last 2 weeks. And I've been wanting to come on and see if other people are on the bands. If, you know, like I said, I've been playing radio since 76. I know what dead bands are like. I know propagation. I've never heard, I mean, I've gone through a few solar cycles already. I've never heard such deadness on all the bands. 20 meters all day long, nothing. I've never, you know, in the last two or three solar cycles that I've lived through, experienced nothing on 20 meters. So, something's going on.
Andy is about to play us that signal. Have A2CDO when you get a chance.
3828, there's something on NY2H. 3828.
I hear somebody on 3820 right now talking to the Midwest.
Thomas. Thomas Tech is squelch. Happened to me yesterday, and I hit the button by accident, and I wasn't hearing nobody but this station. And my squelch was too high.
There's a guy on 3820 calling CQ right now. An Alpha 1 station calling CQ on 3820. Do you hear him? Because I hear him right now as I speak.
Do you hear? Yeah, how do you hear him? Because you must have a decent antenna there. How loud is he in the noise? Is he S3, S5?
He's varying between S6 and an S8, and my noise level now is about an S4. So he's above the noise. Very easily copyable, and he just stopped. He's not transmitting now.
Whiskey Alpha 1 station.
Okay, but that alone is pretty weird that you have to point to one guy that I can't hear on all of 75 meters. There should be stations everywhere. I don't hear the guy. I got everything working, so I know it's not me. So I guess you guys confirmed it for me.
Bernie, you're sure that your RF gain is turned up full blast, and you're sure that your squelch is not squelching the audio? Back to you, Bernie.
Yeah, I've been doing this for like a couple of weeks. I've been over it so many times. The attenuators, RF, I can't believe it, everything. I mean, you know, I want to get my BCW, you know? That's all.
KG2RY.
KG2RY, go ahead.
QSL. I don't operate on 75 meters. I don't have capability yet. But on 40 through 10, I use a noise blanker signal enhancer made by MFJ. And I can bring the noise floor down from S9 to like S1 or 2. It's pretty cool. I think you can only use it with a 100-watt radio. And Maybe you want to have a look at this, Glad.
Go ahead, Eric.
I'm on 40 meters every morning. 40 meters is kind of a good band. Early in the morning, so I'd say 11 o'clock, it's pretty decent. 10 o'clock starts to roll off. Through noontime, the only thing you're going to hear is probably East Coast, because they tend to be strong enough. And then later on in the late afternoon, 40 meters wakes up again. 20 meters is kind of sporadic at the moment, but what I wanted to really say is this geomagnetic storm that happened last night was actually a surprise for the folks that do the forecasting. At the peak of the storm, it was appearing northern lights everywhere. Actually, it says, at the peak of the storm, northern lights spilled across the Canadian border into the U.S. states, such as New York, Montana, Michigan, and Indiana. I'm going to drop. People in Alaska witnessed a fine display. Forecasters did not see this coming. The stage was set for the storm when a minor CME arrived with little fanfare about 24 hours ago. So, geomagnetic activity does have a tendency to affect the lower bands when that happens, but they're saying that you have the possibility of seeing some more auroras for the next between August 26th and 27th. Control
WK2, Jeff. Eric, when we get a blackout because of one of these geometric storms, how long does that typically last? Are we talking about an hour, a day, a few days? How long can it last, Eric? Go ahead.
No, I mean, there's a lot of variables involved in that. I mean, it's just the amount of energy, you know, the geomagnetic storms tend to come and go, but they're really a direct result of what's popping off the sun. When we have good northern lights, we have lousy ham radio.
What's the longest blackout you've ever heard of, Eric?
I remember, I think it was about 6 years ago or 7 years ago, there was a major CME, and I think it made everything quiet for like 3 or 4 days.
Go ahead, Bernie.
Yeah, I just want to let you guys know, I'm in an apartment, but I've been working DX with 100 watts. I'm a random wire guy, always have been, although I have owned beams and other antennas. But I drop the wire out the window and work DX, talk to whoever I want, whenever I want, you know, I mean, when the band's open. And like I said, I've just been trying, I've been listening to ARRL code practice, my CW up, not to keep it up. I mean, you know, I'm like 25, I'm a good 25, 30 word per minute guy. I'm trying to get comfortable with 40 because we don't age, we just get better, so let's get faster. So I like to go on the air, pull out the radio, and rant you. And, you know, believe me, I keep double-checking. Even now, I went back, I checked 40, I checked 80, I checked my antenna, I double-check all my, you know, everything, and it's so dead. And I've had the radio out for a couple of weeks now, and I've been checking every couple of days. So something's serious going on, and it ain't fun for ham radio. So that's all I got to say. Back to you, Dick.
Anybody got a guess as to what's happening in Bernie's QTH that's making all those bands completely dead all the time for the last few weeks?
Yeah, what, WHCDO. Bernie, what's your noise level? Just on one of your radios. What have you asked me to just tell you, just to get an idea?
Yes, exactly. I was just going to tell you. There's no high noise level. It's very quiet. It's regular noise. There's nothing. The noise level is not even moving the S meter. I know what like I said, I've been doing this since 1976, so I know I've been triple, quadruple checking. I expected somebody, you know, one of you guys would be like, yeah, I'm on 20, and the band is all messed up for a few weeks. But apparently, you guys really aren't on the air too much on the low band, so you don't really know what's going on.
All right, one more question.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
Let me get the beep. I'm just curious. I'm going to probably ask what Dick's going to ask. Given your noise level what it is, if you disconnect your antenna from your rig, whatever rig you're listening to, if you disconnect it, does the noise level change at all? Does it get worse? Does it get better? Does it change anything?
Yeah, of course it does. Of course it does. Of course it does. That's why, you know, I'm not saying I have a problem with my radio. I'm saying, hey, any of you guys been on HF lately? Because it's very weird. I'm hoping I have a problem with my radio so I can get back on the air and fix it. But it looks like it's on my radio. I got a Yaesu here. I forget which one. It's a little Yaesu, pretty modern one. And I also have an old ICOM that I've checked on. And I also have an Atlas. I don't know if you guys know the old Atlas. First solid-state transceiver. I have one of those from the 70s. And it still works. So I tried all three radios. So there you go.
So one more question, Dave. I don't find anything unusual happening.
I got another question. If Dick, is it okay?
Go ahead, Andy.
You say your noise level changes by how much? In other words, with no antenna connected to a rig, any rig that you're using, with no antenna, what is your resting noise level on your S meter? What does it show you? Then when you connect the antenna, how much does it change? Does it change a little bit, a lot, or, like you say, it does change, but how much?
In what band are you doing it?
Okay, I'm gonna demonstrate for you. By the way, if anybody hears, anybody on CW on any band, 84, tell me what frequency they are. I mean, I don't mean to bother you guys. I just want to get on the air. So if I'm doing something wrong here and I can just jump on and, hey, I messed up and there we go. But I think there's something going on. This is not normal. Yeah, I'll still listen to this, Andy. Turn the volume up. I think it was ringing.
Time to fade out.
With the antenna, and we got, hang on, actually, something here, I do see a pretty high noise level on the S meter. I'm still not hearing anybody, I don't know what that's from. I don't think it's a local thing. Yeah, that's something to check out. I got like a 5 noise level.
US 2N?
Yeah, I got Paul. Just a quick, Bertie, are you on a handheld radio?
Yeah, I'm on a walkie-talkie by the window.
The signal is dropping out of the repeater, so that's another issue. Because you're trying to give us information and you're getting noisy. So if you have an antenna outside or something, it would help. Because you have to stay in one spot because you're going to lose your signal.
Okay, Andy, real quick, just let me tell you, I'm in one spot. I tried to make you, you know, get to the HF rig, but I can't do that. So here's the difference. Here's with the antenna. Here's without the antenna. There you go. So that's what I wanted to play you.
Peter.
All right, that doesn't... I like the way you simulated that. All right, let me give it back to Dick because you got to get the location because Paul is in there. All right, I'm just trying to get some information from you. Thanks. Go ahead, Dick. Back to you. WHCDO.
Paul, you want to say something? Go ahead, Paul.
Okay, well, somebody was sending CW on 3.520, but he stopped. He was calling CQ. But, that's it. Yeah. He's gone.
I want you guys to understand that there should be lots of conversations going on, not just one guy calling CQ or one guy talking who disappears.
Paul, tune across an 80-meter band, find any signal, CW, sideband, whatever. Play it to us, tell us what frequency it's on. Go ahead, Paul.
Now, 80 is very quiet, very unusual for a Sunday night. I mean, very unusual. Yeah, that's terrible. I could get on. But, yeah, very quiet.
There is a guy calling CQ on 3820 right now. He's calling as I speak on 3820 right now. And, again, he's a WA1 station. He's coming in here S9. I got him as I speak.
P2H.
Can't copy him.
Okay, Okay, and I heard Lou out there, also NY2H.
Go ahead, Lou.
Yeah, so I went on my computer and I went on a WebSDR station. Its URL is K3FEF, foxechofox.com, :8901. And I chose 80 meters and I'm looking across the band and I see quite a bit of activity on this. So there's one guy, but on the waterfall, it's pretty much populated. So there's nothing really totally dramatic going on. There's activity. Okay, to Pennsylvania, this particular receiver.
Yeah, but we're in New York. There's no activity in New York. Analog radio waves.
No, just wanted to make a comment to Lou.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I know he's in Milford, Pennsylvania. I use the FDF all the time, and that's a good point. I just to mention, if Bernie, if you have a computer, you can go on the K3FEF site, and he's got the WebSDR that's always active, it's always on. So you can actually listen on any band and see what activity is going on, and then compare it to what you're hearing on your radio. It's a good site that he has, and I use it all the time. Back to you, Lou, just to give it to you.
Yeah, and if you go to WebSDR.org, there's a number of others, I think Washington, D.C. There's nothing really in New York to look at, but, you know, I even check my signal all the time using these other sites. So on 80 meters, I mean, there should not be a great difference. I mean, I don't think a large Faraday cage came over New York City, so.
Lou, if you turn across 80 meters right now, can you find the signal and play it to us? Tell us what frequency it's on.
Lou, I mean, you're very interesting. I'm talking about listening to a radio in front of me, and you're talking about a website somewhere? Jeez.
Lou is on Long Island. Lou, can you find us an 80-meter signal, play it to us, and tell us what frequency it's on?
Roger, roger. So right now, I'm on 3875.
73. And okay, and that's Tim there. WA1HLR came in the morning, Tim. Good evening, Tim. Okay, very good. 7290 is 9:30 at night. That's great. I wish there were more people on board. They couldn't be there. There's great propagation usually in the evening.
So this site's on 3875.
That's a signal being received on Long Island, Bernie. Back to you, Bernie.
Just tuned into 3875. I don't hear anything. And you're telling me that you hear one signal on the whole 75-meter band, and you think that's normal?
By the way, this guy's on. This is AM, by the way, not sideband. This is an AM station.
Lou just gave us a sample signal. I'll bet you if you tune across 80 meters, there's a number of signals there. Is that true, Lou?
Yeah, in all fairness, this is the one from Pennsylvania. I'm not equipped. I'm using the same rig for VHF and NHF, but maybe Andy can do that. Maybe Andy can... I don't know where... Bernie's QTH is, but Andy's in West Hempstead, and maybe Andy can do that. So, over to you, Andy.
AC2GS.
All right, AC2GS, Roy. Just to mention, there's a lot of AM activity on 3875 right now, and AJ1G, his name is Chris, he's up in Connecticut. I got him about 20 over S9. But these are AM stations, not sideband, just to let you know. So they're having a QSO, a round table, just to mention that. All right, just some information. Back to you, Dick. You can sort it out.
Roy, tell us what you're hearing. Go ahead, Roy.
Okay, I have my pan adapter out. I'm looking at the entirety of 80 meters. It's relatively quiet. There is activity, but not a heck of a lot of it. It's not terribly strong, but you can pick it out of the noise. So I think things have been quiet for a while. I was on 10 meters this morning. The Kings County Radio Club does a 10-meter net, and we could only talk to people very, very local. There was absolutely no propagation on 10. And I think 80 is having a bit of that as well. I mean, I can count about 6 or 7 bumps that come and go on 80 meters, which is nothing for 11 o'clock at night. So propagation is rotten, whether it's the geomagnetic storm or something else that's going on. He should be able to get some signal, so I'm not quite sure exactly why he gets absolutely nothing, but you pull it out of the noise.
I'm getting absolutely nothing because I got a short long wire for the band.
I worked at a local mobile station in Liberty Park on 40 meters about 2 hours ago. Got a signal report 10 over 9.
Yeah, the bands are messed up. There's something, and I got to tell you, FYI, guys, I'm an HF guy. I'm new to VHF. I started with HF. I'm a HFCW guy since I'm 11 years old, and I'm 54 now. And I've never experienced conditions like this. That's my opinion. I'll be on the side. Thank you, gentlemen. Always enjoy listening. I'm a big Limark listener, an occasional member when I remember to renew. 73, y'all. This is Bernie from Bayside saying good night.
WS2N. I could work you, Bernie, if you want that right now, if you want to do that.
Jeff, I only have my receiving long wire here. I don't have my tuner with, the transmit right now. Thanks anyway.
Okay, would have been CW. Okay, fine, but...
But definitely another time. Definitely I'd love to do some high-speed CW another time, for sure. Thanks, Paul. K2MU clear.
Okay, looks like we've cleared that one up. Roy, let's go back to Science Talk. AC2GS, K2RIW, you got it, Roy.
Well, yeah, it's already 5 minutes to 11, so I think we'll hold off on the other stories, but we can kind of touch back on dreams. In addition, one of the things I always found fascinating is apparently there's some mechanism in our brain that inhibits motor activity for the most part. You get some strange people who walk, and that's where that function is not working correctly. But thankfully, you can dream that you're doing all kinds of things with your muscles that are being inhibited, so you don't frighten the person in bed.
Sometimes we will wake up while that muscle inhibiting function is still in process, and you have the impression that you're ordering your arms to move and they will not move, and it frightens that daylight out of people until that function dissipates. Over to you, Roy, K2RIW.
Can I make a dream comment, Roy?
Yeah, sure, Andy, please do.
This happened once in my life where I remember the dream. I was in a car and the car was about to crash, and I swerved, I turned the steering wheel away from what it was going to hit, and my body rolled at the same exact time, and I landed on the floor. I actually landed, and my body weight came down. I hurt my arm. This happened about 15 years ago, where my whole body moved from the dream as it was about to crash, and as the visualization of the swerving took place, my body actually moved, and I rolled right off the bed and onto the floor, to the hard floor. It was a hardwood floor, and as I said, I landed on my arm. My whole body weight came down, and true story, it happened.
Now, I believe you, Andy. As opposed to sleepwalking, you sleep fell. Another very common thing when you're half asleep is suddenly you'll get a sensation that you're falling and you'll grab at the mattress. That's another interesting little kink in our brains.
I've had that sensation of falling, and just as I was about to land, I woke up. That's happened a number of times.
Yeah, there's all little kind of strangeness going on in our brain that most of us are blissfully unaware of. Little engineering tricks that evolution has decided to use to get away with things without increasing the output of the signals and such. So that's just a few of them. There's more out there. One of these days I'm going to do a little spiel on cognitive biases and run down a bunch of things that the salespeople know all about and use every day, like that everything is priced at $19.99 instead of $20. Does a penny make a difference? Well, in our brains, it actually does. So there's a big topic in there for that.
Another question. All right, I'm sure you've experienced the deja vu feeling, which I have. The question is, I wonder where that comes from. And it seems so real, this has happened before. And I wonder if it's true, if it actually happened before, that you get that what they call deja vu thought or feeling. I guess it's a thought more.
There's basically two theories on that. One is that memories are imperfect, and so when you are experiencing an event that's close to a previous memory, the memory kind of folds itself to fit better into the experience. The other theory around is that it's almost like past distortion, that you're actually getting, we build in a sense of reality. We model it internally with about a 200 millisecond delay. So what we think of as reality is just an internal representation of reality. So theoretically, it's possible for it to have an echo, and it bounces back and forth, and you get a kind of double image of a memory. And when you get a double image of a memory, you have this experience that it's happening and a memory that it happened. So those are the two major theories I'm aware of.
Okay, one other question. What triggers it? What actually, because it could happen any time. Any idea what causes it? What's the triggering mechanism?
No, yeah, it's sort of like a slightly bum radio. Exactly where do you bang on it to cause it to malfunction? Now, I do believe that they've done some research. They put very strong electromagnets, and they can induce all kinds of interesting sensory problems. They have something called a God helmet. If you wear it and they put it, the electrodes in the magnetic fields in the right place, they can induce a current and give you a sense of awesomeness and one universe. So I think they can also simulate those, although it's not quite as repeatable. So it's not really designed. It's a flaw, and there are different ways of kind of triggering, unfortunately, that flaw. So it's not, put your left leg on your right arm and shake it twice, and that'll do it, unfortunately.
It's sort of involuntary in a way. Okay. All right, very good, Roy. Yeah, interesting, although I've never studied it, but kind of curious about it. All right, thanks.
You're welcome. If you will, it's more of a cognitive hiccup.
Yep, I got that.
Is that a scientific term, Roy?
I just coined it and copyrighted it, so no one can use it.
Right, switch.
Yes, Lou.
Okay, so I don't know if your dropout situation is caused by the voting or whatever, but I caught something, and maybe you can play this back if you're recording the output. You did a dropout as the repeater was IDing. Now, as far as I can tell, when the repeater IDs and someone's transmitting, the Morse code on the ID is quite low in audio. If there's no signal, it's, regular or loud. And that millisecond or a little bit of time that you dropped out, the ID came up in volume momentarily at the same time. I don't know if that means anything at all, but it's just another factoid to put into the mix.
Okay, thanks, Lou. I mean, so far, the two solutions that haven't been completely discounted is that my voice simulates the dual phone that inhibits the audio output, or that you are hovering above my shack and doing this to me. So who knows? This is going to be one of the bigger mysteries when we talk about neutrinos and gravity and all manner of things, but the biggest mystery is why the heck I keep dropping out no matter what radio I use.
I turned the DMF muting off. It's not, you're not triggering touchdowns.
Okay, so I guess it's UFOs.
You know, I've got to get up to the TV site, please, and I can actually figure out what's... We've gone through having you on just one receiver with no voter, and then the other receiver with no voter. We get the same result.
And I'm listening to his RF directly, as well as the output of the repeater in two separate ears of my earphones. I hear him drop out in 8.5's output, and his RF input and his audio on the input is perfectly clean. So, it's as if he is not directly creating the dropout, and yet it only happens on his signal. Ain't that crazy, Eric? KE2EJ, K2IW.
Yes,
sorry.
Actually, may have some time next weekend, and maybe we can do a little more investigating rather than guessing.
Eric, I want to just inject one more thing we discovered.
Go right ahead.
Yeah, when the touch tone decoder was brought up, I did a test, and actually, to my surprise, I found that some of the touch tones do not mute, even though you had the muting turned on. And I'm not going to do it right now because of the net, but we did this over the air, and I can tell you on a 16 keypad, I can tell you which tones do not mute at all. Some do, some don't, which I thought maybe they would all mute, but they don't, so I don't know, just to mention that.
All right, well, we're going to look at that. You know, when the headphones mute, there's a delay of about 600 milliseconds to 500 milliseconds to create a decoder, and the code to kind of get some of them cycles to figure out what notes it's listening to. Any kind of distortion is going to make it unhappy, and there's a few other things, but now's not the time, but I put that in my book of things to do.
Roy, you don't use different antennas. You use different rigs, but all on the same antenna?
Two different antennas, too.
Two different antennas. Right now I'm using a power supply. The push-to-talk button is different. The microphone is different. Everything is different except me and the location. Otherwise, they're two separate things entirely.
Yeah, once I get up there, I can see what the feed is doing. I can't do that at the moment. There's a propagation time between what actually happens and what I see on my graphical display.
Yeah, and my point is the fact that the ID came up momentarily in volume, it should be indicative that no one's stepping on them, like it's not malicious.
Yeah, well, if, you know, let's say the tone dips for a second, somebody comes on with a solid K, the same thing will happen. Essentially, that happens before the COR drops.
You've listened to the link output from the remote base inputs, and you've seen a dropout on the link. Isn't that true, Eric?
You know, I don't know if I can answer that. It's not in my head at the moment, but it's a very good idea.
I remember at the time you said you were listening to the link, and the link showed the dropout. That suggests it's happening right at the remote base electronics.
Okay. If I was listening to it and I heard it on the link, don't forget, there's a receiver that's receiving his signal. The interesting thing is that we have a choice of receivers that we can use, and we have the receiver at Red Oaks, we have the receiver at the hospital, we have another receiver, and when I switch to a different receiver, we get the same result. So they are all the same model receivers, and they all have the same characteristics of one another, so there's something to be said in that. I mean, you know, once I get up there and hook a scope into it and watch the IF and see what goes on before anything gets decoded back into audio, we'll know what's happening.
It's a mystery.
requires a little more investigation in more than just, oh, let's try this, let's try that. I mean, we have our list to make a systematic deductions from in terms of we know what we've tried so far. But now let's see what the repeater is actually doing.
Can you think of any electronics that you've got at a remote base that takes the RF input at 2.5? I presume.